Welcome to another episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. My name is Peter Ladotti, and I am a technology evangelist for Microsoft, sitting here in the East Coast of the U.S., in New Jersey in particular. And I'm going to be joined today by two of my fellow teammates, or former teammates maybe, Mr. Brian Hitney down in North Carolina. Brian, are you there?
Hey, Peter, how you doing? Yes, I was going to say former teammate sounds pretty accurate, right, because you're on a new team now. We almost should spend time talking about the difference of what you – I don't know if we'll have time, maybe at the end, or should we talk now about what you're doing differently or
– Sure, we can cover that real quick. Let's first also introduce Andrew Duthie, who's also on the call with us today.
All right. Howdy, howdy.
Yeah, so we're about to have the cold apocalypse this week here, I think, on the East Coast. It's going to – all the cold weather that's been out west is coming east soon. And it's the start of a new year, so we're in January, and Brian mentioned that I recently changed roles. I'm still within Microsoft, and I'm still within the evangelism org. I'm just switching from the what we call the audience team, where we do a lot of webcasts like this one and other classes, and I'm going to be joining the partner team, where I'll be working with a lot of larger companies on developing apps for Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. So it's going to be a pretty fun little bit of change in who I talk to, but basically the same technologies, the same stuff day to day, in and out. But the reason we're here today, because the series that Brian and I do here on Microsoft Dev Radio is focused on Windows Azure in the cloud, is to talk about building data and services for Windows 8 applications on the back end. And due to that, we have our buddy Andrew Duthie here, who's going to talk to us about some of this today.
Yeah, so I've been doing a little work on a series of blog posts for building back end services. But I wanted to mention, you know, Peter was giving us a hard time, Brian and I, because, you know, Peter being from the Jersey area, thinks he's got the only pizza out there, and Brian and I kind of begged to differ. Brian, you said you had some pizza, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, I was still eating lunch here because, you know, these shows, it's around 1 o'clock, so I was eating lunch, and so if you don't mind, I'm just going to finish my food while we record this. Is that all right with you?
Sure. Can I have a bite?
All right.
Yeah. Let me have a piece of that there. Right. Hold on. Mm. Oh, that's good stuff, Brian. What I like about this team is we share so much.
Now, the funny thing here, these guys aren't mentioning that I'm sitting here in New Jersey looking at them, and I am not jealous in the slightest because they're eating imitation pizza food.
Right. Okay, okay, Peter. You keep thinking that. It's just as tasty for me. It's not, you know, it's not like it's Domino's or some Pizza Hut or, you know, some big brand. Of course, now we're going to get letters of complaints from those guys.
It's all the same stuff. It's not pizza. Call what you want. The only other town outside of New York that has pizza is Chicago, which is its own thing unto itself, but that's about it.
You are a genuine pizza snob, Peter, but we love you anyway. So that's back right. To the blog series. So a couple months back, I started off with sort of an overview post to describe the scenario that I had in mind, which is when you think about mobile apps, and my blog series is really specific to Windows Store apps, but the concepts are fairly applicable across all kinds of mobile apps. In most mobile apps, trying to do a lot of local data storage is something that's less practical than in a desktop app. Right. In a desktop app, it's not necessarily in desktop apps, you can often have either local storage in, you know, a database on the local machine or on the same network, right? So you're usually doing either single-tier or two-tier development. And in the case of mobile apps, you know, when you're talking about something that goes on a phone or goes on a resource-limited device, having a local database isn't necessarily ideal for a number of reasons. For one, it may be the case that you're building an app that you want to actually have work across multiple platforms. And so the database technology of choice that you want to use may not even exist on all the platforms that you want to support. And so what I've been recommending to developers as I go out and talk to local user groups and things like that is to really focus on building out a set of robust services that are accessible via HTTP and REST that take care of both transporting and then ultimately the backend also stores the data that you want to store for your app. And then because those technologies, HTTP and REST, are so available across all kinds of different platforms, you've got a platform then that enables you to leverage the same back end for multiple different apps if you choose.
So Andrew, you know, that definitely makes a lot of sense, right? Taking something that from, you know, REST and HTTP does make it easy to consume across, like you said, just many different platforms. But one of the things that I get a lot, and I'm sure you do too, is when you develop something locally, and let's just say for argument's sake, the first thing you probably do is if you're storing high scores in a game or something like that, it's very easy to store that locally regardless of the platform, right, in some kind of local storage, local data. Mm-hmm. But building out that back end to now upload data and retrieve that data, whether it's REST or not, I mean, that's a lot of effort typically, right? It requires services on the back end, and you know, there's just a lot of different ways to represent that data, a lot of different technologies. So now I'm kind of leading you here a bit because I know some of the choices you had to make, but the number one thing that I hear from people is how easy is it to do some of this stuff and what are some of the trade-offs in technologies?
Well, I mean, I think that if you took the approach of I'm going to build this REST service, you know, from scratch by hand, yeah, that'd be a lot of work. You know, in my case, what I wanted to focus on was, you know, how do I solve this problem with a number of the different technology stacks that Microsoft supports? And even more specifically, you know, I also wanted to examine some of the different deployment options that you could use for services within the Windows Azure set of services. So the scenarios that I was looking at was really focused around game development and the idea of a game leaderboard, right? So I wanted to be able to build a service and a backend for it that would allow me to store and retrieve leaderboard information from, you know, one to many games. And the games that I started focusing with were games that were actually put together by a couple of our peers on the audience team, David Isbitsky and Chris Bowen. Chris put together a port of an XNA Game Studio sample called Catapult Wars, where he leveraged the assets of that game and demonstrated how to build out an HTML and JavaScript game using the Create.js JavaScript framework. So I kind of took that code and leveraged that. And then David Isbitsky also put together a Windows 8 game development kit and a game called Space Cadet, where you basically, it's a kind of a touch-focused game where you're blowing up ships by tapping or clicking on them with your mouse. The advantage of both of these games is that the games themselves are really quite simple, and they had two different sort of scenarios in terms of scoring, which I thought helped demonstrate how I could build a schema that would support both scenarios. So Space Cadet is really about just raw score. You know, every time you blow up a ship, you get a certain number of points, and you know, whoever has the highest score is the leader on the leaderboard. Catapult Wars is sort of more of a win-loss tie kind of scenario. The actual game is just wins and losses. But basically, so I was able to build out a schema, you know, just sort of as an exercise, how I wanted to represent the data, that was fairly flat and simple, and made for a clear demo of, you know, of the concepts of building that back-end service. So, you know, what I also wanted to do was walk through several server-side technologies that could service these requirements for data and service development, and then also look at how each of these individual platforms could be deployed, leveraging our Windows Azure cloud offerings.
So Andrew, let's talk about that for and at that higher 10,000 foot level. You've gone through the work. Let's look at the mind of an average developer. You've gone through the work of building the game, which David and Chris did with Catapult Wars and the Space One.
Right.
And now at some point you have to say, all right, what type of information do I want to process external to the game? It's like almost developing another whole aspect of the game, like
sure.
You just described going through the process of coming up with these schemas. Mm-hmm. So now when we turn to the server side, the question a lot of the developers ask is, oh, is that really hard, or you know, how much work is it to do that? So defining the schemas, coming up in your head with what you want to do is probably the first step. Now when you actually went to look at the Azure platform and what was out there, what were the different things that you looked at as options?
Well, so one of the things that I wanted to focus on, and I think as I went through the different parts of this blog series, I've got a lot of code that I put together to demonstrate this. But one of the things that I wanted to really focus on was making solutions what's the opposite of intrusive? That basically I wanted to have as little code in the client application to communicate with these services as possible. And basically, so what
friction
I
did free, was, right?
Yeah. Well, what I did was I built out a JavaScript file for each server-side implementation and built an API in the JavaScript that could just be swapped out. And so moving from one implementation to another just simply required changing a reference, and everything else looks the same to the client app. And that was, you know, that was one of my goals, was to make that possible. So the technology stacks that I looked at was, I started off with WCF Data Services and OData. The reason I did that is that that's something that I was fairly familiar with from having developed a data service for my Community Megaphone website. And so I'd kind of been through that stack a little bit. It's a fairly mature stack of, you know, part of the WCF and ASP.NET set of services. And that maturity is helpful because you know that it's kind of it's a stable API. It's been around for a while, so you know it's kind of robust and reliable. The next set of posts, or the next post, I looked at implementing the same leaderboard using ASP.NET Web API, which is a relatively new part of the ASP.NET stack that allows you to quickly build out REST-based services on top of the ASP.NET platform. And then finally, I took a look at a service that's in preview in Azure, which is Windows Azure Mobile Services, which makes it really, really fast and easy to build out back-end services and abstracts a lot of the things that you have to kind of do manually within WCF Data Services or even Web API, and simplifies the process of standing up a back-end services. So there are a lot of advantages and disadvantages to each of these different implementations.
Let me ask this question, because sure. I think this is the big one that a lot of developers are asking. Do either of these offer a, you know, let's just go up and register and create the service and most of the work's done for you, or is it still a significant amount of coding that's going to happen in either of these technologies?
Well, so I would say that, you know, specifically WCF Data Services and Web API are both solutions that are probably more appropriate for someone who's already got some server-side experience on the .NET platform. There's a lot of things that are automated through simply walking through some wizards that generate a lot of the work for you. So it's not a lot of hand coding. And I think, you know, we'll probably in a future episode, we'll get into doing some demos just to show how simple that is. But the both WCF Data Services and Web API are fairly simple to do. I mean, it's really not difficult to get a service up and running quickly. But again, if you're not familiar with the, you know, the .NET server-side stack, that's probably going to be a little bit higher, barrier to entry for folks who aren't familiar with that. Now, the Windows Azure Mobile Services is a solution that really is very, very simple to get started with. You create your Azure account. We've got, you know, both trial accounts available, and you can, if you've got an MSDN subscription, you can get Azure hours that way. And actually in preview, which the Windows Azure Mobile Services is currently in preview, the services are free. So you basically just go in, create your account. If you don't have a database to back up your service, as a part of creating the service, it'll give you the opportunity to create that database. And then you don't really worry about the schema on the server side. You actually just write your code to the schema that you need, and it can dynamically create the table or the table structure underneath for you. You just basically go in and say, I need a table for game scores, and it creates the table, and then when you insert a record into that table, it looks at the data that you sent, which is going to get transported over the wire as JSON data, JavaScript object notation, And once it receives that data, it says, oh, okay, I see a column for, you know, player name, I see a column for game name, I see a column for wins, losses, and ties, I see a column for high score, and it creates that schema for you in the table that, that you put together.
So in Windows Azure Mobile Services, yeah, they have that dynamic schema, which I think is really great because it lets you focus on your code and just the type of data you want to store without having to constantly go back and forth from the database. But I could see, you know, one of the examples, I think it was Chris Reisner and Nick Harris in their build talk, I think if I remember correctly, they focus more on code first entity framework. And you can kind of do the same thing there with Entity Framework in terms of accomplishing a lot of the same thing where you have a class that represents your data and then let it manage your database for you. So I'm not sure if I'm jumping too deep here, but was I think you cover a little bit of this as well in your series. So is there some difference off the bat that reason why you would choose one or the other?
So ultimately, the reasons behind what, you know, the technologies that I chose were somewhat selfish. So I mentioned the WCF data services, which is something I had some experience with. So it made sense to start there because I had, you know, my bearings. And I would definitely recommend for developers that they take into account their level of experience with a given technology as well. You know, Web API, again, you know, from a selfish perspective, it's something that I wanted to get a little deeper on. And so walking through developing a back-end service using Web API both gave me some of that back-end, you know, some of that familiarity with code, but also gave me the ability to kind of walk others through that scenario along with me. So that was pretty helpful. And then finally, you know, the Windows Azure Mobile Services, you know, I really think that that one, the strong suit for that is for folks who don't have a background in developing server-side stuff. You know, I think Windows Azure Mobile Services is a fairly obvious choice there for somebody who doesn't really have a lot of server-side development experience.
So, Andrew, you bring up a really good point there. So you said that you chose to go the route of the WCF data services and the web API stuff out of selfishness because that's kind of where your background skill set is coming from. And you recommend the Azure Mobile Services for someone who might not have server-side experience. What if someone is coming from a different platform where they're just not a .NET developer? Maybe they're an iOS or an Android developer and they're also building a Windows app for the first time and want to tap into the cloud. Would you see mobile services being a good option there for them?
Well, I think the distinct advantage of mobile services, so let's take a step back. Any of the solutions that I outline in this blog series will work across any of these platforms. My focus is on these two HTML and JavaScript games, but these services that I've built out, because they're ultimately REST and HTTP, you can engage with those services from any platform that knows how to talk REST and HTTP. Right, you're not necessarily going to benefit from my JavaScript client code that I'm writing if the client that you're writing doesn't understand JavaScript. But the server side stuff, the REST API, will work fine regardless of what platform you're on, because pretty much every mobile platform knows how to talk HTTP and REST. Right, so we'll, you know, starting from that point. That being said, one of the advantages that Windows Azure Mobile Services has is that they've built out client libraries that are specific to particular platforms. So there is a specific client library for Windows 8 game or Windows 8 apps or Windows Store apps rather, using HTML and JavaScript as well as C# and XAML. So there are client libraries specific to that. They also have a client library for iOS. They also have a client library for Windows Phone 8. So all of those platforms currently already have client libraries that make the coding of the client side of things much simpler. There's also that the Windows Azure Mobile Services team has made a commitment that they will be delivering an Android client library as well. So the distinct advantage of building out an Azure Mobile Service as your approach if you're not coming from the .NET side of things is that you've kind of bang, 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 you've nailed a service platform that has client libraries that supports a large number of platforms out of the box. And if none of those platforms are the ones that you're on, you still have ultimately under the covers you've got REST APIs that you can interact with HTTP and REST. Because in fact, what Azure Mobile Services is doing under the covers is dynamically setting up web APIs for you under the covers. So it's kind of a wrapper around that technology, if you will.
So it sounds like you're selling us on Azure Mobile Services as the most flexible of the two in terms of the options there.
Well, I think that there are trade-offs for each. So, for example, both WCF Data Services and Web API provide at the moment provide a much more robust platform if you want to have a lot of customization on the server side. Right. So if you want to, for example, if I want to have stored procedures in my database, it's possible to do that through mobile services, but it's a little easier to develop server-side logic that calls into stored procedures and that that does some business logic on the server side using either WCF Data Services or Web API. What Azure Mobile Services has right now on the server side is basically hooks into the basic CRUD events, so insert, update, delete, and read, where you can write server-side JavaScript that'll execute, oddly enough, it'll execute in Node.js, and there's some APIs that are built into that. They've built some modules that you can call into to do certain things. But that, you know, that server-side development model, again, for somebody who's coming from a Node background, that may make perfect sense. For somebody who's coming from a .NET background, doing the server-side development that way may be more comfortable for them to be working with WCF Data Services and/or Web API. So I guess my ultimate point isn't necessarily that there's a one technology to rule them all. I like all of these for different reasons, and I actually go through in my blog posts and listed the advantages and disadvantages of each of these platforms. You know, WCF Data Services has the distinct advantage of being, the most mature of these platforms. Windows Azure Mobile Services, I think it's a great technology. It's developing rapidly, but it's still in preview. It would be fine to kind of go ahead and build out your services on that. But the expectations of a service that's in preview are different from those of a mature technology. So I think that everybody's got to kind of take a look at the totality of the services and the stacks and decide which particular parts are the most important to them, and I think that will guide you to the right solution.
Yeah, I agree with that, Andrew. I mean, that sounds like really good advice, and I think keeping in mind that Windows Azure Mobile Services is preview is really smart, depending especially on where you're at with the app and the importance of, you know, the reliability and expectations. It's funny, as you do mention having the Node-like back end to Windows Azure Mobile Services, and nobody is a stronger voice for their personal hatred of JavaScript than I am. But it is, you know, I have to say, though, at the same time, I love having that flexibility in Windows Azure Mobile Services because it makes it so easy to, for example, if particularly for a leaderboard scenario, somebody inserts a leaderboard, you can, with only a few lines of code, send a notification out to users or update their badge with, you know, say some information, or you could send an email upon receiving a certain row. So having those types of actions occur on read, insert, update, and delete that come in, I mean, it's shockingly easy to implement that just on top of a service, or not at all if you just want to have data in and data out situation. But
yeah, it's funny that you should mention that, because my very next blog post is I'm in the midst of writing a blog post that will show how to do a notification, so that basically when somebody else beats your position on the leaderboard, you get a notification that says you've been pwned.
Nice. I like that. That's excellent. Yeah. So we have to do something like that with Rock, Paper, Azure, Peter, where we send notifications out when your bot gets spanked in a competition.
Yeah, we're starting to do that with Twitter now, but yeah, we could probably expand that.
Exactly. So this has been great information. I think we're out of time for this episode, but what I'd like to do is have you back again where we can dive into this in a few more concrete examples, show some demos, show some code, and dive a little bit deeper. How does that sound, Andrew?
Absolutely. I think that'd be great.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up for today. Thank you very much, Andrew. Thank you, Peter. And thank you for watching out there. And we hope this is of interest. And check us out in a future episode. Until then, we'll see you next time.